Welcome to Wellness Radio with Dr. Jeanette Gallagher as your host. Her show discusses topics of health, wellness, and spirituality and is about discovering your place in this great universe from your cells to the cosmos. Along with her guests, in casual conversation, she strives to ask the difficult questions that may be holding you back from a vibrant life and shares new ideas that may inspire you to make a change in your life that you only can see in your dreams. And now, here is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Wellness Radio. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us here this evening. Tonight, we are going to be talking about end of life, out-of-body experiences, maybe about those times when we say, oh my gosh, you know, I feel like I got to the end, I had a surgery, I don't know where I went, kind of felt like I traveled, and it was a near-death experience for me. Aren't these a lot of words that people are talking about these days? And then in the next section, we think about it, we say, well, I would like to know about what's on the other side. What is over there? How are my relatives doing? Can they talk to me? We've shared many times on this show before that I would be sitting here doing a show and all of a sudden I would smell cigarettes like someone was sitting right next to me smoking a cigarette. Isn't that cool? So I knew my loved ones were sitting right next to me. Or I could be making something in the kitchen and I would hear a voice say, hello, Jeanette, what's up? Or I would hear things and we would say, you know, I had a sense of something. What is my intuition all about? And really, is it important? Today, my guest is John Edward. He is a psychic medium, and he's had all of these experiences he will be able to share with us on how, when we have these senses and these knowings, where we're really looking for answers or questions that we have, how can we work through this kind of state of mind, a state of being, or a sense of knowing that seems to be coming up for everyone these days? Because a lot of times people are saying, is if we can ease that fear at end of life and always see that maybe we have one foot in one door and we can conversation with the other side, maybe the fear at that doorway opening or closing might just be a little bit easier for us. John, thank you so much for joining us today. It's such a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, so welcome. John, I saw you on TV. It was a few decades ago, and you had a show, and it was such a great show, and now I see that you're starting to do some events around the world, yes?
Yes, I've been on, a 25-year tour. I'm constantly touring. I'm always going from city to city and kind of spreading some light, trying to shine some light in some dark places. But for the folks that remember the show Crossing Over, my live events are pretty much like that. And all that information is on johnedward.net.
Fantastic. Well, John, don't you think that also, too, what we've really done, I think what you've done over the decades is you've kind of seeded. In other words, I would say to people, if you really want to feel like you get your message out, take a bag of seeds, put them together with some mulch, and go out and throw them out. See where the flowers will grow randomly. Do you know what I mean? And I think it's really what you've done is really seeded the ideas that, is there something beyond this life? Can we speak to those that have passed on and maybe might not be so afraid at end of life, yes?
That was my goal. You know, my goal was to always, you know, raise awareness, to teach, leave people better than I find them, and do it in different ways. And it all happened organically. Like, TV wasn't an overnight, like, it wasn't an overnight sensation for me. TV was 15 years in the making. So I had 15 years of doing this work before there was any type of television. And for me, media in general, like, I never thought, like, I'm going to do radio. Like, I'm going to do TV. Like, that was never a goal. It was like, I'm going to do my work. And I always saw myself as a teacher. And my first book came about because I felt like I wanted to give someone something. I wanted them to have a take-home message. So everything organically kind of like flowed like an ice cube tray, like, you know, one side filled up and then the next side filled up and the next side filled up. And so from writing the book to having to promote the book, all of that just became an organic experience.
John, can we talk about exactly what a psychic medium is? Because I know for myself, you know, I remember angels all the time, you know, when I was younger. I remember having a certain knowing. I remember different things that happened in my life. And I'm sure, you know, for yourself, do we always think that these things were just like normal then? We kind of didn't think they were a big deal. And now maybe they're kind of being held out.
What's interesting for me is that when I was a kid, I was probably one of the most skeptical people you were going to meet, and somewhat condescending towards my mom and my grandmother when it came to having psychics come to the house or any type of philosophical conversation about, you know, angels. Like, I was born and raised Catholic, and I knew I had a guardian angel because I was told I had that. But, like, mm-hmm. I didn't look at some of the experiences that I had as a kid as being deemed psychic or intuitive or,
right.
you know, mediumistic in any way. I just thought
right.
it was, like, you know, it was normal. And I think I come from that place and I teach from that place that it's important to recognize that it is normal and to
yeah.
try to normalize some of the philosophies that, you know, we probably have in common.
And I think it really brings up the question that can everybody have a sense of something else other than what we believe is, quote, this lifetime? Do you know what I mean? We walk around with this human body and everybody has a concept that that is you, the you. And they forget about soul or spirit or energy and all this other stuff and maybe, you know, living for eons and what is this lifetime? I know that's a lot of words. That's a lot of concepts. But really what it is a lot of times people say there has to be something more than just going to work, having kids, having a house and a car. Don't you think?
100%. I have always had those existential questions in my head, even as a young teen. Like, what next? I remember liking this girl, Christine, in school, and I could still see the bus number was bus 109, and I was in sixth grade and thinking, like, okay, so Christine and I maybe start dating, and then we go to high school, and then we get married, and then, like, I went down this line of probability
right.
and recognized that, nope, this isn't going to happen. There's no Christine. Like, now, I didn't realize I was reading that situation, but I was thinking bigger picture young. I was thinking about what happens young. And then my mom passed when I was young, and when you lose a loved one, you're forced to now actually confront those issues. Some people deal with it with anger. Some people deal with it with suppressing it. I dealt with it by embracing it and questioning it and wondering and asking questions. So I think it's important for people to be skeptical in life, not cynical. Cynical means that they're not open to anything, but skeptical means that they're questioning everything. And I think that if you question everything, then you're seeking information and answers, and that makes you an explorer. And when you're an explorer, it leads to discovery. And when you have discovery, then you can raise your awareness and you can put it to action.
And also, too, what you're doing by being an explorer is you're finding your own truth, not someone else's. So if someone else is saying to you, this is the way it is, in other words, my grandfather shows up in the corner, he's smoking a cigar, and I notice that he's got on the old clothes that he wore in 1910. Do you know what I mean? And then people go around searching for that image within their paradigm, and then they say, I can't do it. I don't know how to do it. It doesn't show up. I don't get the right answers. I go to readers. I this, that, the other. Because they are cemented in that truth of someone else's versus how to find the truth for yourself, yes?
Yeah, well, my grandmother showed up, and she was 93 when she passed. But when she came through to me as a 30-year-old woman.
Mm-hmm.
And she had 11 kids, and as they were sitting around the table, and I was passing on information, and I remember saying to my aunt, who is this woman talking about grandma? And my aunt was smart enough in the moment to say, I don't know, keep going. And I did, and I went on for a while, and then I finally said, who is this woman? And, like, how do you all know who this is? And I don't know who this is because I lived with my grandmother. My mom passed before my grandmother. And I'm like, who is this lady? And my aunt said, do you want to know? And I said, yeah. She goes, it's grandma. And I literally remember me going, no, it's not. Grandma never looked like this.
Right.
And my aunt said, to you. She goes, grandma never looked like that. She goes, but who you're describing is my mother when I was a little girl. And it literally, I had that moment of going,
yep.
Oh. My grandmother was smart enough to come through to me in a way that was outside of my image of her so that I could be objective. And I think they'll do that with you know, everyday people who are not mediums for a living. Their family members will do things unique. Somebody once at an event said, we don't understand, my grandmother came through in a visit, like a visitation in a dream, and she was wearing a sports jersey. My grandmother hated sports. She hated when we watched sports. Like, she's not a sports fan. Why would she come through in a jersey? Well, that team won the Super Bowl the next year.
Ah.
So there
was, it
was like
a validation of something that was predictable,
yep.
Yes?
Yep. It was a little Easter egg message. And I think that readings are like that, too. Like, I will give information in a reading, and people expect everything you say to be spot-on accurate in the way that they want. And I'm like,
right.
No, that's not realistic. That's produced television. I go, if you go for a real reading, you're going to have a list of information that maybe you won't understand, because there are mm-hmm. things that you have to process. And that processing and that reveal and that aha moment, when that happens 3 months, 6 months, 9 months from now, becomes another validation of that continued experience.
Because isn't it also that you're just not going for a reading to get the words for that day, to say, oh, okay, I got that. Because if you do, it's already in your perception, you know, quantum physics. Hey, I see it, it's there, and it's already behind you. In other words, your present already is your past, you know. So if you look at it and you're getting some messages that are maybe imprinting, like, for you to explore something, isn't that the greater good? Because that's really what we're looking for. We're not looking for someone to say, oh, you're going to have a hot dog for lunch today, and you have the hot dog, and you're going, okay, well, what next? You know, instead of saying, you know, something like, what would you like to have for lunch today, and leave that as an open door, right?
Yeah, I'm more of the lesson person. I'm looking for the actual lessons. When I started doing this work, and I was working at psychic fairs, I actually fired my first client when I was like 16 years old. And this woman had come maybe like over the course of a year or 2 years, three or four times to me. And I literally remembered her first name, and I knew her scenario. And I would sit there and I would do the reading and I would get the information. And finally, the last time she came to me, I said to her, I go, listen, come back with me. And she's like, where are we going? I walked up to the front desk, and I said, do you see this woman? And they went, yeah. I go, I'm firing her as a client. You can never, ever book her with me again.
Yes,
and they looked at me, and they were like, nobody had ever done that. And here, you know, this is a 16-year-old kid, you know, firing a 45-year-old woman. And I said, I'm not the right person for her. And they go, okay, was there an issue? And I said, no, she just doesn't listen. And the woman burst out hysterical laughing. I was like, I am not a magician. And she was in a situation where her boyfriend was married. And all she wanted to know was, is he going to leave his wife?
Right.
And I was like, never going to happen. Not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, no, but he keeps telling me. You know, he keeps telling me. And I'm like, right. But you're coming to me, and I'm the psychic. And I'm telling you, it's not going to happen. And other things that I was saying was happening. So I'm like, you're seeing the validation of what I'm saying, but you're choosing to ignore the truth. So you're not somebody that I want to spend my time with, energy-wise. You want somebody to tell you the fantasy. So I was more interested in this woman shifting and recognizing her value to create a sacred space to allow an individual to share her life, and she was interested in being stuck on the same mentality of, I want this guy, this specific guy, and only this guy. That wasn't going to work for me.
Well, you know what, John? If you look back at it, and we always think about looking back at things in reflection, wasn't that great to have her as a tool for you so that you knew that 100%. You wouldn't go down that path?
100%. And I think every client that comes in, every person that's kind of universally brought in front of us, they're there for a reason, to teach us a lesson.
Right.
And I remember an astrologer said to me once, every brick and rose. And I looked at him, and I was like, I don't get that. What does that mean?
Yeah.
And he would say it a couple of times, like, every brick and rose. And I really didn't understand it. And I said, is that like a poem or something? And he goes, no. He goes, you have to embrace every rose that's thrown at you, every rose that's thrown at your foot. Every rose that falls at your foot and every brick that's thrown at you, you have to embrace the same.
Yeah.
Today we discussed many life-changing concepts. Who do you turn to, and how do you know what is best when faced with a health crisis? Dr. Jeanette is a patient advocate. She listens to the patient, the doctors, and the family, clarifies the health issues and concerns, then helps the patient make the best choices going forward. If you would like help implementing change into your life and health, we can talk and see where you are stuck and how to improve the quality of your life. Check the link on the bottom of today's show page or visit drjeanettegallagher.com to schedule a phone appointment today.
And you know what, sometimes we talk about pain and suffering with people, and they say, but I'm having pain, and they're way on the other end of the outlier of the paradigm, you know, and they truly want to get back into where they have no pain, which is truly on the other side, when really what you and I are saying is, how can you exist in the middle and be devoid of all of those attachments, but also learn from them, don't you think?
I do, and I also find that people are pattern-based. So they become what I call addicted to the needle of negativity. So we you know that we're dealing with an opioid crisis in the country, but
right.
I think that we're dealing with people being addicted to negativity. There's a toxic component to the world that we're living in when it comes to energy, and people are addicted to their devices and social media and news and politics and the tribalism that comes in every aspect, not just politics, but of what they know. And if someone is dealing with grief, instead of doing the work to come out of that, if they start to move away from that, they might feel like they're moving away from the loved one that they've lost.
Yeah.
So they do something to put themselves back into the place of that needle of negativity, and they shoot that needle up again because they feel safe and secure in the dark of what they know, and that's limiting. So to get people to stretch and to leave that spot sometimes is very, very, very hard.
Well, you know what also too, John, what I think also is that sometimes when they're in that negative spot, they believe that that is where their stories, where their connections to others lie. And, you know, sometimes people go to angel readers or psychics or intuitives or whatever, and they say, I want to know if my loved one is hurting, if they're safe, if they're okay. And I always say to them, but an angel is devoid of the human experience. How could they be anything but okay? How could they be anything but safe? How could they be anything but that? Because they're on the other end of that. And now are you willing to get and release out of that one spot so maybe you can move towards that? Don't you think sometimes people think that you have to sit in one spot so that you can resonate with that energy, because that's where the more or less movie tape is reading. But if you could drift off into it, you might even really connect on a higher level, yes?
Right, but you have to then, as a human, you have to be in check ego-wise. And
right.
I cannot even tell you how many times, like, you know, like you hear, is it projection that a psychiatrist deals with their client, transference, where there's a transference of energy or projection that the client puts on that psychiatrist. Well, I think people do it with grief all the time.
Yeah.
If someone loses a loved one, that loved one can't possibly be okay in the afterlife without me. They can't possibly be okay and be happy because
right.
I'm not there, right? So it's that human ego that projects like the bat signal into the sky, that level of grief, so therefore they can't be okay because I'm not okay. And in reality, I agree with you, it's the exact opposite. They're absolutely fine. And I always say it publicly. I say, they're fine.
Yes.
We are not. They're okay. You're not. And,
right.
you know, here's the big message that I try to get out there. You have to be 50% of the equation with your loved ones who have passed.
Mm-hmm.
You're not entitled to a reading or a message. It's a relationship. So just because they're now on a different side of the veil, that doesn't mean that you're entitled to get a sign or get a symbol. It means like any other relationship, you have to work at being 50%. And if they're not in a physical body and they're energetically only able to communicate in a certain way, then you have to be able to receive those messages and be in acceptance of how that communication is going to come across. And, you know, I'm known for being like no BS. You know, my wife once said to me that I'm like, you know, Judge Judy, and I happen to be psychic. I take no prisoners when I read. And I don't have tolerance for stupidity. So it's like I will call people out on stuff while I'm reading for them and say, mm-hmm. like, you know, you're not paying attention to what's coming through because you're too focused on what you want to hear. Like,
yeah.
it's really important to understand that you have to be a participant in that dynamic. And I don't mean in the reading. I mean in your everyday life. So, mm-hmm. but people do that. Their human side, that ego side, that goes to the grief, goes to the gimme gimme, rather than let me work on this.
Right, because actually, if you look at it, grief and disempowerment, having to seek all the time for reasons of self-pleasure, self-validation, self-whatever, is a lower vibration. And if you're looking and you're saying, I want to communicate with someone that's, quote, at a higher vibration, maybe those that have passed on or angels or spirits or whatever it is, you're asking them to make this quantum leap for you. Well, are they going to come down in the frequency? Generally not. I mean, you have
right.
to, as you said, come up and do your part. You need to raise, in other words, you've got to get out of the pool if it's lightning outside. You know what I mean? You've just got to
right.
do it. And once you do it, you'll say, whew, you know, I'm standing upright. I can see the trees. I can smell the storm coming. Okay, now I can make a judgment. I can make a call that I need to not be here in the pool and I need to get away and I need to make a change. So what you've done then is you've raised your up out of the hole, and then you'll hear a different frequency. You'll hear a different story. Isn't that true?
Right. I agree 100%. I do think, though, that they do lower their frequency vibrationally to be able to connect with us. So they don't live on that frequency, but it's like
right.
we raise our vibration through meditation and prayer. They lower their vibration into the physicality of our world so that the communications can happen, I think, more readily, but they don't live in that space.
Right, and that's true that they don't live there because sometimes people will say, you know, with the grief and pain and end of life, I see this quite often, they'll say, well, I saw a glimpse of them, I smelled something, I had a sense of them. And then when they don't see it the next day, they say, oh, my loved one's abandoned me. God has abandoned me. They're not here anymore. What the heck? They have to show up every day. In other words, and I've even seen people, you know, they'll sit in the same corner of the same couch for weeks on end because they saw it at one time. In other words, they're trying to create their own validation of something, you know?
Yeah, no,
don't you think?
And that's that ego part. Like, yeah. I remember literally doing a reading for a woman and her husband had passed tragically, and it was a really profound experience for me, and I will never, ever forget it because of one of the key things that came through. During the entire reading, I kept seeing a bell, but I didn't know what it meant. So I didn't just say to her, I'm seeing a bell, but I interpreted what a bell might mean for me. So I started talking about the Liberty Bell in Pennsylvania and Philadelphia. And
right.
You name anything colonial America, I think it came out of my mouth in this reading. But that was the only thing that she could invalidate. And he was awesome. Like, for me, all these years later to remember it, like, he was awesome to come through. And I finally, you know, was, like, pushing the bell symbolism, but not saying it. And she
mm-hmm.
said, oh, I don't know what any of that is. She goes, maybe it's not him. And
right.
I remember literally, like, looking at her, annoyed. And I was like,
mm-hmm.
hold up. I go, you're willing to say it's not him because I can't figure out what the bell means. And then when I said bell, it clearly it was a really obvious thing that if I just would have said bell early on, I would have saved my 20 minutes of explanation about Philadelphia. But she was willing to get rid of like what 99% of the reading was because I couldn't understand that one thing. So I would say, like, don't be so willing to surrender your connections because you're not getting what you want.
Right. Yeah, and it's really interesting when you do these readings to do, you know what, John, I almost see you, and I was, I guess, in dream state last night, I saw a vision of you, and you were standing in the middle, and you had this, like, piece of paper that was coming down, you know, bisecting you, giving you a left and a right, and on your left, you were holding your ear like you were listening to the, you know, whoever wanted to talk, and you had your right-hand side of your face going out the other side talking. It was almost like a cute little logo, you know. It was like you were listening to one side and you were speaking to the others to share. So it was just kind of cool. And I think that's really, I think sometimes people say, well, how do you do this? And it up came that logo, yes?
Can I tell you, that's more accurate than you could possibly imagine. When I was a kid in high school, we had high school orientation. And when I went to high school orientation, one of the teachers, her name was Ann Kraut, and she taught Afro-American studies. And she said, I hope that you don't get me as a teacher. I do not teach from a textbook. I teach from my notes. I don't give you notes. You have to take notes. If you do know shorthand, you'll pass my class with an A. If you don't know shorthand, you better learn how to write quickly over the summer. Like, it was a, dear God, please don't let me get her class, right? Well, guess what? I got Ms. Kraut. And she was like, she put the fear of God in me. So I went home that day when I found out that I had her, and I called my mom in the city, and I said, I need you to teach me shorthand. And she said to me, what? And I said, well, you're a secretary. Don't all secretaries have to know shorthand?
Right.
Well, that's when I got my first lesson in feminism and being chauvinistic of thought. And she said, no, not all women know shorthand, John. But hypothetically, happenstance that day, she got two books that landed on her desk, same day, called Alpha Hand. So she comes home and she goes, it's not shorthand. She goes, it's speed writing. And she gave me the books. So I taught myself speed writing the entire summer leading up to freshman year. And back then, commercials and the rotations of the same commercials were very, very heavy on TV because we only had like, you know, three or four channels. So I would literally write down word for word. When I tell you word for word, I was that fast. I could literally transcribe commercials like I was spot on. So what happened is I trained myself that summer to hear right. So I was able to navigate not just her class, but I could have sold my notes and had a business in high school and college because I was able to transcribe legitimately word for word what I heard because my brain was trained to hear it, write it. Well, now looking back on that, they were really training me for this work because now I can hear it, say it. Same thing. So as fast as it comes in is as fast as it comes out.
Yeah, because you really do have to train it, because I know for myself, you know, when I'm listening to stuff, you know, editing a show, it's sort of like I'll hear a piece and I have to stop and hear a piece and then I have to stop to be able, I'm like, okay, I can't do both of those actions at the same time, but really you are doing both actions at the same time. And isn't it almost as if that veil is just, it's almost really holding it together as a zero point. You know what I mean? Like it's really, just as you said, you're hearing and speaking, but it's almost as if you are one with both sides.
Yep. And I tell people, just get out of the way of it. And they're like, what? I go, just get out of the way.
Yeah.
I go, you're so in your head about it. So I have a colleague that, when he reads, he has to read with his eyes closed. He doesn't go into trance, but it's easier for him to focus when his eyes are closed. So I know that when my son's going to get information, I will make him close his eyes because he's very similar to this colleague in personality and the way that he thinks. So if my son's going to get information, if he closes his eyes, he doesn't question it as much. He lets it go. Whereas my daughter's more like me. She can keep her eyes open and just focus on something on the wall and be able to do it. You have to find out what works best for you as well. But getting out of your own way is probably really important.
Do you think, John, that people can intuitively start to pick up on these little cues now that, as we are saying, the veil is getting thinner, or maybe we will say that now we are becoming more spiritually open to be able to having these experiences?
I want to say yes to that with a huge caveat.
Yeah.
I think it's really, really important that people protect their energy because I feel like there's so much out there that to send somebody out and say, just go be open and let go, you know, and not be like, but here's the deal. You know, you need to protect yourself. Energetically, there's a lot to be protected from. And I think it's important for people to know that from every medical commercial that's on radio and TV. You know, I say this always, like, I think it's important for people to be careful because what you're allowing into your zeitgeist is the fact that you can get that or you're allowed to get that. Or the nature of your relationship dynamic, you know, protecting your energy from the world. Yeah, but it's more important you protect your relationship, your energy from your siblings or from your spouse because they're the ones who you let in. So it's usually the protection for the people that you're closest to that you have to, like, guard yourself. And I think that comes with, like, you know, clear communication and creating healthy boundaries. So,
you know, I noticed for myself, like, I was flat open, like probably the last 2 decades. And what I noticed is that you would feel like you walk in Walmart like you're in a bubble. And all of a sudden, or else, you know, after Hurricane Katrina here in New Orleans, we would go down the street and I'm like, oh my gosh, it's gray. All this stuff's coming at me. I could smell this. I could see that or sense that. And I think sometimes I was so vitally open that, yes, you do have to protect yourself because it could really almost dismember your essence of who you are. Don't you think that sometimes it can almost, you'll find yourself drifting off? And you really have to be good at keeping yourself in space or in check, so to speak, because that may not be such a healthy thing, right?
100%. Like, I already know that there's certain circumstances, like, I won't go in. You know, I had circumstances where, like, one friend said, you know, do you want to go to this friend's house? And I said, no. And he's like, well, you know, why not? I'm like, I don't like their energy.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay. I'm like, so you go. But I don't really feel comfortable being part of that. And I was very, very aware of where I was going to kind of place myself because I didn't want to experience that. And the analogy that I use when I'm teaching is I'll say, if you're a non-smoker, you've made the choice not to smoke for health reasons or whatever. But if you go into a bar and it's, you know, a smoke-filled bar and you're in there for 15 minutes, when you leave that bar, you're going to smell as if you are a smoker.
Right.
Because you're going to take on that smell. Mm-hmm. That's the analogy that I use when it comes to energy. You might not see it, and you don't want to take on somebody else's energy. So I'm very much about protecting the pool that I'm in and keeping it clean and filtered.
Yeah, and I think that's really important, you know, because, I mean, sometimes you can also let in some dark energy too, don't you think? Because you know, I mean, we see people all talking about this now, about seeing or sensing dark energies around them.
Yeah, I wrote a whole book called Fallen Masters. And in Fallen Masters, it's a novel. But I was told by my guys, I want to say it was like 2008, that I needed to write this book from a fictional standpoint and talk about the positive and negative forces. And I think that, you know, negative comes in different iterations. And I think people look at it in various different ways. But I do believe in that there's a lower vibration. And I think we have to be very careful about where we associate and what we let in or who we let in or how we let them in.
Right. And do you think that as we are now, just in closing, I wanted to talk a little bit about this. Do you think that now as more people are starting to be more consciously aware or more open, that as we see, as you said, a lot of this stuff out there, it's almost like instead of kind of seeing a split, we're seeing those that are really bringing up the energies like yourself and I and all of the others, and we're seeing that the others are coming up too, almost. It's almost like two sides. It's almost like splitting of the river kind of thing. You know what I mean? And both are getting very high. And I always see it as one day it's just going to go poof, and we're going to be out of this loop that we're in, this frequency. We'll go to the next one, you know, and see what that's all about. But I think that there's a lot of, even though we're not engaging in the social media, the TV, the dogma, all that other stuff, yelling, screaming, and all that other crap, we're on the higher part of it, it too rises at the same time that we rise, don't you think?
Yeah, and I think sometimes we have to match that. So we have to choose a higher vibration because some of the vibration on the planet is so debased right now. And the moral values of what's accepted or what's tolerated, you know, we have to develop a recognition that don't become insensitive or desensitized to some of the things that we know are wrong just because there's so much of it. Allow yourself to recognize that it's still wrong and we need to rise above and make a shift and a difference. And it's, and you know, making that statement alone, anybody hearing me say that, it sounds political, but it's not. It's it's humanity. It's coming from a place of humanity. But the lines have been blurred in the last few years. So it's funny, like, that statement will mean different things for different people.
Yeah, and I think also, too, the idea, I see a lot of times people will say, well, I'm not going to engage in it. I'm going to turn my nose up. I'm going to be at the higher light. I'm going to walk the other side of the street. And they'll say, well, in essence, aren't you not the same? Because what you've done is you've just capped your ego, and you've kind of said that you aren't in the world. You know what I'm saying? In other words, you're feeling like you're on this pedestal kind of idea, and you put a glass silo around you. And that's not really the point in the either, is it?
No, because we're a part of humanity, right? And the word humanity has the word human in it, and we're having a human experience, and we're here to learn lessons. But you also can't spell the word unity, you know what I'm saying, without looking at the word humanity. So I think it's really important that when people are recognizing the world that we're living in, we're being broadcast a message and a feed. And I think information is bombarding people at a tremendous rate through Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and social media, as well as news. But people aren't seeking out sources. They're allowing their circle of conscious community that they're part of. And that's why you're seeing people that are, you know, the older white individual coming from a place of fear and worried about, you know, people taking their jobs and whatever other kind of stuff that's socially happening. But there's a level of people not recognizing that you could recognize police brutality with people of color and still be pro-police. You could recognize that, yes, there's been a huge church scandal with pedophilia and still say that not all police, not all, you know, priests partake in that. So there needs to be a delineation between we can still call something wrong and support the bigger picture. And that blurred line has been, I've lived that my entire life, because every time there's an attack on psychics, I get included in it. Like, if there's a media attack, boom, I'm in it. And I'm like, oh, okay. But I don't get angry at it. I say these attacks on the psychic community are important because it starts, I don't like being included in them. It starts a dialogue that there are people out there that are doing this work not for the right reasons, or they're not good at it, or they could be doing damage. So what they do is they show that there's a clear delineation that there are some people who do not believe in the subject matter, and they're going to be anti it, but they start a conversation and a dialogue equally as important because it gets people to question stuff. So I think it's important to always question. And this way you won't be taken advantage of by somebody who claims to do this work and can't, or is that bad priest, or is that bad cop, or is that bad politician. You become the informed person because you're making your own decisions based upon how you view something.
And John, in closing, truly what you do is you really bring comfort to people because you're bringing at that time where you're saying, let's let that veil down, you know, end of life, where someone has passed on or they really need to connect with the other side. I think what you really do is you're really just kind of standing in the middle and saying, all is okay, and how can we work through this? And as you said, you know, you're not always giving the answers that they want to hear. You're giving them the best answer for the moment. Don't you think sometimes that people will say, how can I connect with you and find out more information? Because I think a lot of people really want to seek your help. And I think to really read your books, to engage on your website, to find out more of your past shows, to find out all of the kind of language that you speak, it kind of opens up some doors in people and they'll say, I want to know more. But also, too, it will help raise their awareness so that they can also, too, feel a little bit lighter in life, not worry about so much, kind of let go of some things. Yes?
100%. My job, I feel, is to teach, raise awareness, and leave people better than I find them. And, you know, the funny part is at some of my events, people will say, how come you never recommend your books? And I say, well, what if my book is not the right one for you? I'd rather you seek out the book that you're supposed to find, and you become informed on that level. But thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Yes, and John, could you share with the listeners how to find out more information about your website and your new program, Evolve, and also about your events this year?
Anything that I do is on John Edward, no S on Edward, it's johnedward.net. All my social media is there, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Evolve is there. That's the network that I'm working on.
Well, it was really a pleasure to have you with us today, because I think sometimes people will say, my fear is greater than that, but I'm really in my heart seeking something. And I think that's where you come in. So thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, and good luck.
If you'd like to find out more information about John Edward, please do click on the link on the bottom of today's show page and go directly to his website, where you'll be able to find out more information about his events in your local area, or perhaps maybe just a short trip away. Also, he has a program called Evolve, where you can find out more information about his work, his books, and how to be able to have a reading with him. And it really, truly is about being able to be open, to be in awareness, to say, you know what, I just really need to let some of this fear go and just allow my heart and soul to start to speak. And truly, John's work can help you do that, bring you a little bit, maybe just open a little door, clear out a few cobwebs, and help you connect. Thank you so much for joining us today. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher. Until tomorrow, have a great day.
Today we discuss many life-changing concepts. Who do you turn to, and how do you know what is best when faced with a health crisis? Dr. Jeanette is a patient advocate. She listens to the patient, the doctors, and the family, clarifies the health issues and concerns, then helps the patient make the best choices going forward. If you would like help implementing change into your life and health, we can talk and see where you are stuck and how to improve the quality of your life. Check the link on the bottom of today's show page or visit drjeanettegallagher.com to schedule a phone appointment today.